Whether to fund or defund the police has been a big political debate in recent years. In his State of the Union speech back in March, President Joe Biden made the case for more resources for law enforcement.
We should all agree the answer is not to defund the police, it's to fund the police.
But our next guest says that more police spending may not necessarily bring down violent crime rates. Instead, his research shows that when police spending goes up, less serious misdemeanor arrests go up as well. And we want to hear what you think. Do you want to see more funding go to the police or less? Do you think police funding should be focused on reducing violent crime? Has your life been touched by the criminal justice system? Do you work in law enforcement? Love to hear from you. 800-642-1234. You can also email us at ideas@WPR.org. With us now is Brendan Beck, Assistant Professor of Sociology at the University of Colorado, Denver. His research focuses on policing and city budgets. Brendan, thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me, Molly.
So when we say increases in police spending, what we're really talking about is more police officers. Is that right?
Yeah, about 90% of any organization's budget is going to be personnel, and police departments are no different. The lion's share of police spending is how many officers that department hires. So if there's more money going to a department, there's going to be more personnel, less money, less personnel.
Okay. And so you analyzed the budgets of so many cities across the nation for going back almost 30 years. What did you find about police spending? What have the effects been?
Yeah, we looked at police spending and police force sizes, meaning the number of officers that the cities employed, going back to between 1990 and 2018 for 940 cities and towns in the United States. And what we found is that when the amount of funding or personnel increased in a city, that was a very, very reliable predictor that the amount of misdemeanor arrests would go up in that city as well. So there's a very, very strong correlation between the amount of spending that a city expends on police and the amount of misdemeanor arrests that those police then make. We also found the inverse was true. So if a city decreased the amount it spent on police, they made fewer misdemeanor arrests. And the reason we were interested in misdemeanor arrests is there because they're one area that police have a lot of discretion over. They can choose whether to make them or not. So they're the kind of thing that might be influenced by increases in policing, either budgeting or personnel. And we were also concerned with some of the harms that misdemeanor arrests can cause. Other research has shown that even a single misdemeanor arrest can really compromise someone's access to a job, to housing, to family obligations. These sort of things can really suffer if someone's arrested for a misdemeanor. And when I say misdemeanor, I mean offenses like loitering, trespassing, disorderly conduct, drug possession, gun possession, these more minor nonviolent offenses. And so because misdemeanor arrests can have these really devastating consequences that can cascade into fines and fees and more criminal involvement, in the worst cases, a single misdemeanor stop can result in the death of someone, right? As we saw with George Floyd and Eric Garner in New York City. And so we were interested in how these misdemeanor arrests might be causing these increase and decrease in misdemeanor arrests.
Sure. So you found more police on the streets equals more misdemeanor arrests, generally speaking. What does that say about violent crime? What did you find there?
Yeah, we found that as cities spent more money and hired more police officers, more of that increased funding and police force potential was going towards misdemeanor enforcement and less was going to felony enforcement. And enforcement includes the kind of investigations into violent crime and investigations into serious organized crime and things like that. And so increases in police spending often disproportionately went to misdemeanor enforcement instead of felony enforcement. And we also know from other research that intense misdemeanor enforcement doesn't have a lot of help in reducing violent crime. There was a big movement in the 1990s that your listeners have probably heard of called broken windows policing.
Sure.
And the idea was that if you really nip it in the bud, if you really enforce misdemeanor crimes really intensely, that would reduce more serious violent crime. The subsequent 30 years have not borne that out. We've not found that intense misdemeanor enforcement reduces violent crime. In fact, there was a study out of Boston just last year where they worked with the district attorney there and randomly dropped some misdemeanor charges for some people who'd been charged with a misdemeanor crime. And then they proceeded to pursue, the district attorney proceeded to pursue misdemeanor enforcement, misdemeanor charge with the other group. And they found that the group of people who had had their misdemeanor cases dropped were actually less likely to engage in future crime over the next 2 years. So it seems that the disruption that a misdemeanor enforcement might have is not just not reducing crime, but it might actually be disrupting people, making their lives harder and having them commit more petty crime. And so we were really interested in understanding what's the effects of these kind of misdemeanor arrests, considering they don't reduce violent crime and might even exacerbate it.
So this effort potentially is backfiring.
Exactly. Yeah. And it was a good idea. You know, one can understand the logic of broken windows policing. If we really want to, address small behaviors like drinking in public or urinating in public or panhandling, right? If we really want to stop those, maybe that'll create a sense of orderliness. But what we're finding is the causes of violent crime aren't about a sense of orderliness in one's neighborhood, but are caused by other things, stressors in their life, be they economic or romantic and things like that. And so this well-intentioned policy of broken windows policing is actually backfired and actually caused a lot of harm.
So does this hold true for cities that have more robust community policing programs?
That's a great question. And we were also really interested in finding out, well, maybe it's not the amount of policing that really matters for misdemeanor arrests, but maybe it's the type of policing. So we also examined whether cities that pursued community policing had lower misdemeanor arrests. And it makes sense on the face because community policing is oftentimes contrasted with broken windows policing. Community policing is a type of enforcement that prioritizes making engagements with the community, talking to business leaders, problem solving with alongside members of the community. And so we thought perhaps cities that pursue this kind of more relational and community type of policing would see reductions in misdemeanor arrests because the police wouldn't be pursuing this sort of harsh enforcement tactics, but would rather be pursuing collaboration. We didn't find that was the case. In the 940 cities that we analyzed over 29 years, cities that implemented community policing were no less likely than other cities to make misdemeanor arrests. There was no difference in the amount of misdemeanor enforcement that cities pursued. What that says to us is that, it's not the type of policing, at least when it comes to community policing, it's not the type of policing that matters, but it's the amount of policing. So that if a city hires more officers, those officers will make more misdemeanor arrests, regardless of the overarching policy, whether it's community or broken windows or something else.
So why do you think it is that when police departments gain additional funding and staff up and gain additional officers, that they focus on beat patrols and these kind of misdemeanor arrests versus staffing up detectives and focusing on those felony offenses, those more serious violent crime?
It's a great question. I think one reason is that solving violent crime is incredibly, incredibly difficult, right? It takes a lot of resources, a lot of investigation. A police detective might spend months working on a single murder or assault case. And then at the end of that month or two, they might only make a single arrest. But if you want to find some drugs or if you want to look for people who are loitering, an officer can go out and do that easily and make several arrests in a single day. And so the type of productivity metrics that police have traditionally emphasized, things like arrests, citations, stops, right? Those kind of numbers that police departments sometimes pursue can encourage this kind of more conveyor belt, more assembly line kind of justice, where it's just we process lots of people through the criminal justice system instead of targeting those really important crimes, because those are very, very difficult. I often talk to undergraduate students, and they're often surprised to hear that 50% in the typical police department, 50% of violent crime doesn't result in an arrest, which means that 50% of the murders, assaults, and other violent crimes that are getting reported to the police aren't getting solved. And that's because solving violent crime is very difficult for a lot of reasons. People might not want to cooperate with the police. There might not be good evidence. Maybe the victim doesn't want the perpetrator to go to jail, and so they don't work with the police. And so doing this sort of small ball stuff like loitering or drug possession arrests can show productivity, can help a police officer advance in their career, and can also help the department show that they're being productive, even though that's not the kind of things that keep our community safe.
We're talking to Brendan Beck. He's a sociologist with the University of Colorado, Denver, and we're talking about his research that found when police spending goes up, so does the number of arrests for low-level offenses. You can join in, 1-800-642-1234. Do you want to see more funding go to social services, alternatives to policing? Should there be more funding and training for police? We're at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us, ideas@WPR.org. The conversation continues, coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Molly Stenz, in for Rob Ferret. We're looking at new research on police spending that finds when a community hires more police, the number of misdemeanor arrests rises too. Brendan Beck with the University of Colorado, Denver, is here with us. We'd love to hear from you as well. So, Brendan, I wonder that you've talked about the impact that misdemeanor arrests have on an individual, but I wonder what the overall impact is of rising arrest rates and rising misdemeanor rates on the criminal justice system. Is that something your research looked at, kind of beyond just a police department impact?
Definitely, yeah. I mean, 80% of arrests in the typical city are made for misdemeanors. So, you know, only 20% are made for felonies, for serious violent crime. And so that 80% of arrests that are for misdemeanors is going to be the bulk of what any city experiences when they're interacting with their police. And so that means that when the police are interacting with city residents, they're not strategizing ways to solve violent crime. They're not strategizing ways to improve quality of life in the city, but they're interacting on these small issues like disorderly conduct or marijuana possession or other kind of drug possession. And this kind of repeated low-grade interactions can really degrade trust with the police. There's a lot of research that shows that not just people who are stopped and arrested by the police, not only do those people themselves suffer a loss of trust with police and a loss of trust in the criminal justice system, but they also, their communities, their loved ones, their neighborhoods start to be less inclined to cooperate with police. So one doesn't even have to interact with an officer for one of these petty misdemeanor offenses to feel less safe, to feel that the police are less interested in protecting them. And a lot of research, as your listeners won't be surprised to hear, has shown that this misdemeanor enforcement concentrates in poor communities and communities of color. And these are the ones that are already least likely to trust the police. So when police departments pursue this kind of misdemeanor first enforcement strategy, they're making their jobs harder because people are less likely to cooperate with them, less likely to report crimes to them. And that makes solving violent crimes harder. So if a department wants to solve the kind of violent crimes that are serious, serious plagues in our communities, and in some cities are getting even getting worse, pursuing a misdemeanor first strategy is going to make that even harder.
They need informants. They need eyes on the ground. They need community members to tell them things, right?
Yeah,
to trust them, to give them information. Mm-hmm.
Exactly right. And the community members need to trust the criminal justice system enough that they want to use the criminal justice system to solve their disputes, right? If you don't think the criminal justice system is working for you, you might be more inclined to take justice into your own hands, pursue vigilante violence or retaliatory violence. And so that it's going to have a lot of cascade effects when the police don't have that trust.
Sure. Well, I want to go to the phones now. We have got calls coming in left and right. And we're going to go next to Jerry in Menasha. Hi, Jerry. What's on your mind?
Yeah. Your study about nonviolent or misdemeanor type crimes. Have you looked at what would happen if the misdemeanor crime was processed in the courts in a faster manner, like in 1 day, 2 days? I've heard of where people have been, especially down in the New Orleans area, somebody goes in for a misdemeanor, and he's in there for months before he even shows up in the courthouse. They lose their job. They lose their car. They go into more, put them more at risk of keeping, staying in good portion of society.
Thanks, Jerry.
I think you're absolutely right, Jerry, that if misdemeanor crime was processed faster, that would be better, right? You can imagine all sorts of people who, when they're waiting processing in jail, they're not getting access to medication they might need. Maybe they're not able to care for children or loved ones who need care. Maybe they lose custody of their children as a result. Of course, there's lots of fines and fees associated with court processing, so they're losing money through that mechanism. And so I think you're absolutely right that faster processing would help. But a lot of the research shows that it's even a single arrest, even an arrest that doesn't result in jail time, can have negative consequences on people. Single arrests make people less likely to vote. It makes them, if they're undocumented, it makes them more likely to be deported, right? And there's a type of law that Milwaukee and other cities have called a nuisance property ordinance, where even a single arrest can lead the police to encourage landlords to evict people. And that if properties become the hub of too many 911 calls or too many arrests, the city will fine not just the tenant, but the landlord. And so even a single arrest can really compromise someone's housing situation, their healthcare situation, their family situation. So while I think faster misdemeanor processing would be a good start, I think reducing the interactions with the criminal justice system are going to be even better for people.
And it strikes me, too, that as you talk about more police and more misdemeanor arrests, you're also looking at potentially more jail beds, potentially more strain on local prosecutors, on criminal defense, right? There's kind of cascading effects outward throughout the system.
Absolutely. And the criminal justice system at the municipal level, the county level, and the state and federal levels are incredibly expensive, right? A lot of tax dollars go towards maintaining these systems. And we might think, as taxpayers and residents and receivers of social services, we might think, where should the city, where should our state spend each additional budget dollar, right? If it goes towards police, that might have some crime reduction benefits. But if it goes towards housing and education, might that reduce crime even more in the long run and not have the kind of cascading effects that you're talking about, where there's not only more costs for us taxpayers, but there's more costs for the people who are involved in their communities, costs that are keeping them from from thriving. Right. And so I think, a lot of the police funding conversation happens in a vacuum. Should we spend another dollar or one less dollar on the police? But I think a more holistic conversation can be had to decide where should we spend that additional dollar across a whole range of municipal services, because things like housing have been shown to reduce crime, right? If people have secure housing, they're less likely to commit crime. Even libraries and parks, municipal services that we don't typically think of as crime control, those have been shown to have really positive effects for reducing crime. And so, and they don't have the sort of collateral consequences of costing people or even harming people like we see with police killings. So, a more holistic budget conversation can bring a whole lot of people to the table, a whole lot of municipal and state government functions to the table.
Well, I want to go to the phones. We have Karen in Madison standing by, just a minute or so left. Karen, what's on your mind?
What's on my mind? I was raised in a pretty middle-class family and have had, in my older life, a huge education on the injustice of the so-called justice system, and how our prisons and jails are full of people that have mental illness, drug addiction, same thing. It's a mental illness. People that want to get help for their addictions, which is really for their injuries, for their trauma of their youth and from our culture, they can't get help. They're put on waiting lists, or they say, come back next week, when today I'm going through heroin withdrawal or whatever it is. And today I'm willing to take the help. And also I have a nephew, and just in his knowing of people, there are five young men dead from drug and alcohol overdoses or gun violence.
Let's ask Brendan. We're up against the clock. Karen, thank you so much for calling in today. Brendan.
Yeah, Karen's absolutely right that a dollar spent on drug treatment or on mental health treatment can be really useful. There's also cities like Denver, Colorado, and Eugene, Oregon, that are shifting towards mental health crisis responders that can try to develop responses to mental health needs that aren't just the police. That's a great point.
Yes. So in the last moment we have with you, Brendan, what would your advice be if a mayor came to you and said, hey, I want to reduce crime, what should I do?
Yeah, I mean, in the long term, investment in social services, education, jobs, and housing is going to have a much bigger and longer lasting impact on crime. That's a tough decision to make, but I think a brave mayor who's not just interested in the next election, but is interested in making their city even better would take that opportunity in a heartbeat.
All right. Well, we are going to leave it there. So thank you so much for joining us today, Brendan.
Thanks so much, Molly. It was great to talk with you.
That was Brendan Beck. He's an assistant professor of sociology at the University of Colorado, Denver. And talking today with us about his research that found that when police spending increases, the number of misdemeanor arrests increases too. Very interesting stuff.